This is a podcast about Jeopardy!
Hello and welcome to Potent Potables, your weekly Jeopardy! Podcast where two former competitors bring you recaps and analysis of the week's Jeopardy! Episodes, a deep dive into a topic inspired by one of those episodes, and a quiz. I'm Emily.
And I'm Kyle, and this is the week of October 2nd, 2023. This is the first week of the wild card spades division. I don't know how to properly articulate that other than what I just said, so I guess that's it. And yeah. So before we get into anything else, we had some clarifications on what's going down with Jeopardy this season. We got confirmation that the wild card jamboree tourney get together extravaganza.
Fete. No, it's not a fete. It's
the diet.
Regatta.
is going to go through December 18th. Not sure what's going to happen between December 18th and the new year. And then in the new year, there will be another second chance and wild card.
For season 39, right? So they're doing contestants from seasons 37 and 38 now. And then they're going to do the same thing over again for season 39, if I understand correctly. And then we will have the Tournament of Champions.
And then it will be, you said, April?
And then it will be April. We have 16 weeks of new contestants at that point, and then the season ends. And then presumably we need to bring all of those people back for
season 40 reunion.
Yes.
The season 40 inductees reunion tour.
Yeah. reunion tour.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been trying to go with it, but
it's something else.
I'm very happy for everybody who gets to go back on the stage again. All 100 and I don't know. No, it's 100 and something just for this first round. Are they doing another 100-ish for the next one?
Oh my God.
I mean, I guess I'll say it. Like, this is kind of dumb.
I agree. I mean, I realize if the idea was we have to do something that we can do without the writers to try and not violate something but still have our show run. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Bringing people back with recycled questions, fine.
Yeah.
Just to put something on the air. Okay. But it's like, you know what we're not going to do this year? Is the show.
Right.
It's like, it's year 40. And if you wanted to do something big for year 40, that big thing would not be, hey, let's just bring back everybody from, like, the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the thing that was so great about the Ultimate Tournament of Champions and the All-Star Tournament and everything was, like, they're pulling these people who, like, have been gone for a while, right? It's, like, it's embracing the legacy of the show.
Right.
Whereas this seems to be the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'll be fine. The writers are back. We'll get new questions. The quality of the material will still be good. So if you're just watching Jeopardy for the sake of, you know, quiz questions, great. It'll be whatever. It'll be the same.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't feel... I don't know. It feels... I don't know how to describe it. It just doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, do the stopgap for as long as you need to. That's fine. I don't blame anybody for that. But now that it's not... Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Agreed. And, like, yeah, the whole thing is... bizarre. And like I've said this on the podcast before, right? Like, there's a part of me that's jealous, and like I think the pre Mike Richards, like pre Michael Davies, like contestants, we have vanished from we are not on the radar. And you know,
absolutely,
there are literally hundreds of people who are getting to go back, which is like an entirely new thing. And like, I want in.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean...
The whole thing is dumb, and they shouldn't be doing it. But if they're going to, can I come back?
Yeah, but if they're going to, why is there this line?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
I don't know.
Yeah. And Michael Davies being like, well, you know, I mean, now we've got second chance for people who won zero games and the tournament of champions for people who won, like, five or more games or sometimes four. But, I mean, there's this gap of people who won a game but not enough to qualify for the tournament. Like, yeah, that's yes.
That's why the tournament. Yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a compelling story around, like, second chance tournament. Like, I feel like that works from a narrative point of view.
Sure.
But I don't think this whole wildcard thing works as a narrative.
It's like they're doing fine. It's fine. But yeah, like you said, there's not a narrative here. It's just like, hey, we brought people back. Mm-hmm. Like, cool.
People who did well, but not extraordinarily well.
Right. Like, yeah. Especially that, like, you already won a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's our thoughts on what's going on this season. We're still going to watch it.
Yeah.
We're still going to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
And so now we're here. Emily, how are you doing?
I'm good. My personal update is fairly Jeopardy heavy also this week, which is my most fun thing that I did this week. Actually, I have two most fun things I did this week. I went to see Amy Schneider talk at the 92nd Street Y about her new book. I think it's called In the Form of a Question. I haven't read it yet. She was giving a talk like the day that the book came out. So, you know.
That would have been hard to do.
Yes. Harvey Fierstein was her conversation partner. At one point, he held the book up and he's like, how many of you have read this? It's a wonderful book. And not a single hand goes up. And he's like, well, you didn't. And Amy's like, the book came out today. So yeah, I went to hear that and it was really cool to be, you know, to be there in person. And she talked a little bit about Jeopardy. Some people leaving behind me thought it was really intense Jeopardy nerd stuff that she talked about. Okay. It was frankly, I mean, it was surface level as far as this podcast goes, right? It was, you know, that buzzer timing is a thing and like that you can study the previous games on the internet to like,
yeah,
learn a little bit about what kinds of things might be covered. It was not deep Jeopardy nerd stuff, right. Okay. But it was more nerdy than many of the people had thought about.
But you knew who you were coming to hear.
You knew who you were coming to see. Yeah, I mean, I think there were a fair number of people who just go to the speaker series at that venue. And there were people who were there to see Amy Schneider, you know, transgender
icon activist.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, these people are really into Jeopardy. But it was a really cool event. Also, I went to see Mean Girls in a movie theater on October 3rd, which is Mean Girls Day. So that was fun too. Yeah. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm waiting for my new job to start, which means I am substituting, which is just great. And I definitely love it. Definitely. It's great. And I love it. Aside from that, I ended the season in first place in my Rundle and Learned League.
Congrats.
Feel pretty good about. And I'll be moving up to back in the same Rundle as Emily now.
Woo!
So that feels good.
Yep. Yeah, I dropped down from A, so we'll be a couple of season or two ago. So B Rundle for both of us.
We'll be back in B.
Yeah.
Being it up.
I have dragged my games and sports score up from like 0.324 to 0.334, which is still not very good, but you have to get a lot of questions right
to improve it
that much.
Right. Especially if you've been in the league a long time.
Yeah. I'm a sports expert.
Well,
she's not a sports expert.
She is not. But as far as anybody else knows, like, prove her wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have talked a while, so we need to get into Jeopardy.
We sure do.
This week, Monday, October 2nd, quarterfinal game one for the Spades. We had the contestants, Dane Reigard, a writer and editor from Los Angeles, California, Emily Seaman-Hoy, an attorney from Houston, Texas, and Bert Thacker, a project engineer from Palm Springs, California, who I understand is running for office and shouldn't be on TV.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jeopardy round categories are Geography B in quotation marks, Fighters, Are You Shakespeareanced, A Bug's Life, Native Americans, and a category about nothing, which I remember that category title. I'm not sure if these clues exactly were the ones that showed up, but I remember that category title.
Yeah. I felt for Emily on the $400 level of Native Americans. She made a great logical guess that turned out to be incorrect. The book Weaving the Dream is the story of Mabel McKay, a renowned pomo maker of bees. And Emily tried what are dream catchers, right? Like Weaving the Dream, categories Native Americans. Sounds reasonable.
Yeah. That'd be a great title for a book about dream catchers.
It would be, but that's not correct. Bert got the rebound. It was baskets. She's a basket weaver. Oh, the other one that jumped out at me, the $1,000 level of A Bug's Life, used by scientists to clean flesh off bones being prepared for research. Dermestids are a type of this insect. Bert knew that one. That is beetles. I just learned that because I read Horse by Geraldine Brooks, which came out recently. And I don't know how long ago these clues were written, but I was like, oh, I wonder if whoever wrote that clue learned that the same place that I did.
Hmm.
Could be somewhere different, you know.
What is Horse about?
Horse. Geraldine Brooks novels are often kind of spread across centuries. Mm. So there is a kind of immediately antebellum plot about a racehorse. And then there's like a modern day plot about the museum scientist who prepares skeletons for display and is working on a project around the skeleton of the horse.
Gotcha.
Who is like a racing horse in the 19th century.
Okay. I was like, when do we get to the flesh-eating beetles?
Yeah. So she's using beetles in preparing other skeletons. And then this thing about this like racehorse skeleton becomes part of her work. It was an interesting book. It was pretty good. Daily Double number one is at the $800 level of Are You Shakespeareanced? It's pick number 11. Dane finds it. He's at 1800 with Emily at 3000. Bert's at zero. He wagers 1200 of it, and he gets the clue. The aisle is full of noises, sounds, and sweet airs that give delight and hurt not. And he had previously guessed the correct answer for a different question when it was incorrect. So this time he is correct when he says, what is the tempest?
That's right.
And at the end of the Jeopardy round, Bert's at 1600, Emily's at 4800, Dane is at 3200. And the double Jeopardy categories are South Africa, they played Wyatt Earp, signs and symbols, Egyptian mythology, hodgepodge, and proverb versus proverb.
I liked Egyptian mythology. I always do.
Yeah.
The first pick of the round was the $2,000 level there. This city of the sun was home to the cult of the sun god Ra. And I know that, like, it always throws me off when I'm trying to think of like names of ancient Egyptian things to remember to be like, oh, that's right. A lot of the things we call them are Greek. So if you think of Greek for city of the sun, that's Heliopolis, which is what it is. But of course, if you're thinking like Egyptian, gosh, what would that name be? I don't know. You're not going to get there.
Yeah, city of the sun in quotation marks is trying to kind of help you get there. But if you don't know that, you can know
right
that it's a translation of city of the sun and be like, oh, well, I have no idea.
Well, I don't speak ancient Egyptian.
The hodgepodge this time all had to do with people named Hodge or in one case, a cat named Hodge. We'll get to that, though,
which is clever. I like that. That's a good way to use hodgepodge.
Yeah.
Instead of just here's trivia that we didn't know where to put.
Yeah, agreed. I was anticipating a lot more hodgepodge and potpourri. And not themed hodgepodge like this, with them recycling clues. I was assuming that there would be like a bunch of like unrevealed clues and that they'd be like, let's have hodgepodge, potpourri, random facts.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to just kind of grab the stuff that hasn't been used and throw it all together. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with the better categories than that.
Yep.
$2,000 level of signs and symbols was a triple stumper. In heraldry, this word follows bend to denote a diagonal line ending in the lower left. That's a bend sinister, and most of us probably know sinister means left hand and dexter means right hand.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just a fact to know. I don't know why that always jumps out to me. probably because my left-handed friend really hates it when I call him Sinister. I'm like, but you are. You sat where Lucifer sits. Just kidding. Let's see. Daily Devil number 2 is in the South Africa category at the $1,600 level. Bert finds this one. He's only at 1,600. Emily's at 4,800. Dane's at 3,200. It's only pick number 2, so it's very early. He wagers 2,000. He gets a clue. The majestic Victorian City Hall in East London, South Africa, held the first hearing of the post-apartheid TRC, this commission. He's unable to find it, come up with the answer. That is the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So he drops into the red.
Did you recall this? That he said he wanted to make it a true daily, true double. And then Ken asked for the clarification of, wait, mm-hmm. so did you want to do 2,000 or just the 1,600?
Right.
Yeah.
Got to be careful when you have low numbers.
Yep. And daily double number 3 is also at the $1,600 level. This one is in Hodgepodge. Dane finds it. He is at 6,000 with Bert and Emily tied at 3,200. He wagers 2,000 and he gets the clue. James Boswell recounted this British man of letters' affection for his cat Hodge, for whom he bought oysters. He can't come up with it. Boswell wrote The Life of Johnson. So Dr. Samuel Johnson is what they're looking for. Oysters are very luxurious now, but they used to be kind of a cheap, kind of poor person's food. Believe it or not.
Didn't lobster too?
I think so,
a bunch of stuff used to be that way until it wasn't for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overfishing.
There you go.
You're welcome. Pretty much it. I'm just going to bring you right down.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep.
So at the end of the Double Jeopardy round, Bert's got himself up to 7,200. Emily's at 3,600 and Dana's at 10,800. Final Jeopardy category is presidential proclamations, and the clue is both issued in April, 80 years apart. The first proclamations by these two presidents each declared national days of mourning. And ooh, the proclamation pointed people in the wrong direction here. We all missed it. Emily wrote, who is Abraham Lincoln? That is one person, not two. And they were asking for two. She wagered nothing, though. Bert wrote, who are Lincoln and Truman, which gets, you know, I don't think that gets the years correct.
Yeah, not quite.
What day was Lincoln? Like, when was
April?
When was Lincoln?
April 12th, I think.
Well, okay. Well, actually, that does make a lot of sense, because if Lincoln was assassinated in April, FDR
April 14th. Sorry.
1865.
Yeah.
April 12th. FDR died in April of 1945. So actually, that math does work out.
Yeah.
That it could have been Lincoln and Truman, but that's incorrect. He wagered everything, drops to zero. Dane wrote, who are Lincoln, and was going for FDR, wagered 5,000. That's also incorrect. It's Andrew Johnson and Harry Truman, both for days of mourning for the previous president having died. So that's what they're going for. Everyone missed Johnson. But Dane, with a wager of only 5,000, keeps his lead and is the semifinalist.
They scrolled past Dane, really trying to get it during the Final Jeopardy thinking music and like counting on his fingers. I wasn't sure if he was counting presidents or probably presidents. Yeah. But it was relatable, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that brings us to Tuesday. The contestants are Greg Marrero, a school administrator from Huntington Beach, California, Katrina Hill, a program officer from Alexandria, Virginia, and Lawrence Long, a nursing student and stay-at-home uncle from East Bend, North Carolina. Lawrence Long's outfit was on point, by the way.
I do remember Lawrence, the stay-at-home uncle.
Great pocket square. Yes.
Oh, yeah. He was dapper before as well, yes.
Mm-hmm. The Jeopardy round categories are This Is My Country. They will give a world leader. You name the country they led. Name the classic song. There's a colon in that. So it's a name in a classic song. It's a title of a classic song. Hey, lady, with E in quotation marks. All these names will begin with the letter E. Southern California attractions, food for thought, and two vowels, one consonant. Not necessarily in that order.
That's a good point. I recently went to karaoke for a friend's birthday.
Ah.
And I do not enjoy karaoke. It is not a thing that I particularly like to do, although I've never
done
it.
I thought you were a musician.
I am a musician. Correct. I am that.
You don't think the people should make music?
I think it should be reserved for the select few who have been gifted with God. Gifted by God. With the talent. No, I think everyone should make music, and that's fine. I just usually don't enjoy karaoke.
Fair enough. I'm just joshing.
I don't know. I've just always been uncomfortable during karaoke.
Yeah.
This
Did
was
you do
fine.
Any of these songs?
Yes. As in, like, in the room I was in, we did the $600 level, which I had never really heard the lyrics to, like most songs. Like, you just kind of let the words go by and you don't necessarily think about them all that much.
Mm-hmm.
The song is Come On Eileen. And the lyrics, you in that dress, my thoughts I confess, verge on dirty, come on. And it's there's more than that. And so, like, we got done with that song and we all kind of looked at each other and we're like, oh, that is not how I thought that song went. Like, we all felt kind of like, ooh, rough.
Yeah.
And there were, like, four or five other songs that we sang that night that, like, as the lyrics came up, we're like, what? Wait, that, I don't remember that.
Mm.
So I guess that's what karaoke is good for, is to, like, make sure you are aware of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did it, and I don't have to do it again for another 35 years.
Okay.
Is my plan. The $1,000 level of food for thought. Monosaturated fats in these alligator pears can lower blood pressure and promote a healthy brain. That's avocados. Now, do you think they're called alligator pears because of the skin on the outside and they're shaped kind of like pears? Or because alligators eat them? Or do you think the first time people encountered avocados, like, they were, like, bartering with alligators and the alligator was like, I will give you these pears for a goat.
The alligator talks in Strong Bad voice. I am just now realizing that pear is like the shape, and that they're not saying that the shape is like an alligator head, which is somehow what I always pictured, right? Like, I picture, like, little, like, Mario, like, avocado alligator.
Yeah, just put a couple like, of
chop,
eyes
chop,
there.
Chop, like,
on
some
the...
googly eyes, like, cut down the thing, like, put some teeth.
Well, now I have to make some avocado or alligator pears, yeah. And maybe my kids will be more eager to eat them.
Yeah, that'll be good for their blood pressure. No,
and their brain.
And their
Actually,
brain.
They like avocados pretty
yeah.
much. They'll eat those.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good.
Yeah, my kids do too. Yeah, I bet that it's the skin is alligator like. But now I'm gonna have to go home and think about this misapprehension on my part.
Daily Double number one is in the This Is My Country. This is the first category they finished. It's pick number two, and it's at the $800 level. Lawrence finds it, so he's at 800 at this point. Katrina and Greg are both at zero because he just got an $800 clue. He wagers 1,000 and doesn't say make it a true Daily Double. It's the clue 1935 to 1944, Manuel Quezon. And he gets correct with what is the Philippines? So he gets himself out to a lead, and he maintains that lead. By the end of the Jeopardy round, he's at 7,800, Katrina's at 4,400, and Greg is at 4,600. And we get the double Jeopardy categories, literary biography, 20th century Fox history, we've got sewing clues, we've got sewing clues, the Congo River, Men of Michigan, and 4-4. Each response is composed of 2 four-letter words, which I also recognize that category title as well. But I don't know if these were the same clues or not.
Yeah. Ken claims that Lawrence was the first person to say the $800 response on Jeopardy, although maybe he was just, you know, just chit-chatting. That clue was, it's slang for the offspring of a celeb who becomes a celeb too. And Lawrence got it with, what is a Nepo baby?
Mm-hmm.
That was the only one that was correctly answered in this category. It was a rough category.
According to J Archive Search, this is the only time that Nepo baby has come up.
Okay. Now we know. The $1,200 level, one of these is to keep a bar of scented soap in with your dirty laundry when you travel to help clothes smell clean. That is a life hack. That is a real life hack. My daughter has been seeing like YouTube videos of purported life hacks, and she'll come into my room and be like, Mom, Mom, I learned a life hack. You can draw onto plastic wrap and then put the plastic wrap on top of a glass of water, and then your drawing goes onto the top of the glass of water. And I'm like, what is that? Like, what? What? Why
what
do you
need? What does that accomplish?
I'm like, for it to be a life hack, it has to be something, you know, that like improves something about your life or like makes things easier for you somehow. Like, what is your? And she's like, well, but then there's. And she's like, well, the video said it was life hacks. I'm like, okay, the video was wrong.
Okay, like. Interesting things that I've discovered when I was screwing around with stuff is not a life hack.
Yeah. But this particular one that Jeopardy mentioned, that seems like a valid life hack, I guess. We've got sewing clues was, that was an enjoyable category. But they only got the $400 and $800 levels about patchwork quilts and tapestries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody knew that applique is the layered sewing technique that means put on in French, like apply. Yeah.
I also did not know that.
Daily Double number 2 is in literary biography at the $1,200 level. Pick number 8, Lawrence finds it. He is at $7,800 with Katrina at $5,200 and Greg at $4,600. He makes it a true Daily Double. Astounding, Ken. And he gets the clue taken from the title of one of her poems. Mad Girl's Love Song is a biography about the 20th century woman and her life before Ted. And surely he must have listened to my deep dive, because how Indeed. Else could he know that it is Sylvia Plath?
No one else has ever known anything, especially mm-hmm. not the people who we get our information from for the deep dives.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So he jumps way up. Daily mm-hmm. Double number 3 is only 3 picks later. It's in the Congo River at the $2,000 level, and Lawrence finds this one. He is at $17,200 at this point. Katrina's at $5,200. Greg is at $4,600. So he's way ahead, and he only wagers $1,000.
Yeah, Ken asks if he's going to make it a true Daily Double again.
Yeah, but he does not.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably. Gets the clue, these two capital cities of the ROC and the DROC lie across from each other on opposite banks of the Congo River. And this is a world capitals question. I feel like it should be not the $2,000 clue. I realize he's asking for two, but also with these two, if you know one, you know the other, because it's mm-hmm. Kinshasa and Brazzaville in Democratic Republic of Congo and Republic of Congo.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence knows it. He gets it correct. And he says, should have done it.
Yeah.
Should have gone for it.
Yep. So at the end of the Double Jeopardy round, Lawrence is in a locked position with $22,600. Katrina's at $6,400. Greg is at $8,600. The final Jeopardy category is the 1500s, and the clue is, in the early 1500s, he produced a codex in words and pictures on the flight of birds, one of many subjects that interested him. Katrina couldn't come up with anything. I wrote, who is Albert Yora? And then got cut off. It was going to be a really good boy. That was a message for her dog.
Oh, yeah, of course it was for her dog.
Yeah, they're really all good boys. Boy. Well, they're all good dogs. And she's wagered 116. Greg figures it out. Who is Leonardo da Vinci? Or who Leonardo da Vinci, actually, is what he writes. Because they have you write the who. Mm-hmm. And then you may or may not forget the who that is.
Ooh, Leonardo da Vinci?
Yeah, he's wagered $85.99, all but a dollar. That brings him up to $17,199. And Lawrence had written down Linnaeus, but crossed it out and then got Devin. He and Ken had a fun little back and forth about, like, that's what they call him around the neighborhood. Right. He didn't wager anything. So Devin is enough to demonstrate that he figured it out, but not enough to get credit. But, you know, it doesn't matter. He had a lot game and wagered nothing. So he gets that semifinalist spot.
That is right. And that brings us to Wednesday, when we have the contestants John Bussard, a marine aviator originally from Ringo's, New Jersey. Kendra Blanchett, a registered dietitian from Elk Grove, California. And Evan Roberts, a chemistry teacher from Louisville, Kentucky. Get the Jeopardy round categories. Earth science, please bear with me. We try to stay neutral. Art for art's sake. State of the estate. And mirror words, words that are reverses of each other, such as reward and drawer, which I never really thought about those being opposites at the $1,000 level. Money for the return of something lost, and a compartment in a cabinet to keep it in. I never thought about those being reverses.
Yeah, that was a new realization for me also.
I did well in the art for art's sake category.
Mm-hmm.
Felt good, especially the $800 level. She's the American Board expatriate whose work is seen here. They show a picture. It's kind of, you know, impressionist, late impressionist, you know, reminiscent a bit of like Van Gogh or whatever, or Renoir. It's Mary Cassatt. John got it. It took me a long time to remember who Mary Cassatt was and like be able to like pinpoint her, but I felt really good about it at that point because I'm like, mm-hmm. I learned something in my adulthood. Yay.
Yay. Good job. Yeah, I recognized her also, and then was able to come up with the name of the $1,000 artist, which was a triple stumper. The unique modern stylings of this abstract Dutchman are seen in his Broadway boogie woogie. That is Mondrian, whose name I used to always be like, I don't know, the squares guy, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I'd be able to picture Mondrian, but somehow the name wouldn't stick for a while, but now it has, I think.
Yeah, if it has right angles and like yellow and blue and red.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, there we go. It's mm-hmm. Piet Mondrian.
Yep.
Sorry, the bear with me category. So the $1,000 level, the correct response is Baloo. Mm-hmm. Lovable childhood character. The $600 is Paddington. The $400 is Fozzie Bear. The $800 is a little bit out of character. This man is Jackie Moon after a stunt on the court with a bear goes awry in Semi-Pro. If you have a small child, use it as a shield. That's Will Ferrell from Semi-Pro. Okay. But then the $200 level. A February 2023 headline said this movie about one seriously hopped up Ursine snorts up $23 million opening weekend. It's Cocaine Bear. I mean, I realize it's just about bears. And I guess specifically bears in, like, movies. But, like, I don't know. Cocaine Bear doesn't seem to fit with the other bears.
Yeah, no, I had the same thought. Daily Double number one is in We Try to Stay Neutral at the $600 level, pick number 14. Kendra finds it. She's at 2,600 with Evan at 1,000 and John at 2,200. She wagers 1,600 of it, and she gets the clue. Soon after a beating by France at Marignano in 1515, this country decided expansion was out and neutrality was in. And she figures it out. It's Switzerland. They try to stay neutral. So at the end of the Jeopardy round, Evan's at 4,000, Kendra is at 6,200, John's right behind her at 5,800, and the Double Jeopardy categories are Where's the Problem? You name the body part mainly affected by the condition in each clue. How's the King taking it? Waxing Philosophical. Animal Verbs, Looney Tunes, and Merry Melodies. Did you have any thoughts about the Merry Melodies?
Sure. The $400 clue I thought was trickier than it might seem. The cheerful tune you're hearing is this composer's overture to HMS Pinafore. John got it correct. It's Sullivan. But of course, you know, Sullivan is always paired with Gilbert.
Right.
And you gotta, if you aren't sure which one's the composer, it's kind of a coin flip for $400. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that was good. The $800 level, Liberty Bell March by John Philip Sousa became this comedy troupe's theme song. John also got that. That's Monty Python. I just thought it was weird that they picked the Liberty Bell for Monty Python's Flying Circus. Like, that's the intro music. They're British, you know? I don't know. It just mm-hmm. felt like a weird one to choose, but whatever. And then I thought there was Negbate at the $1,600 level. This composer, known for ballets, composed a merry waltz for this opera, Eugene Onegin. I guess known for ballets should point you to Tchaikovsky, and it's also Russian. But, like, you get waltz, and you're like, well, it's got to be Strauss, right? The waltz king. But nobody went for it. They didn't even guess. But that is Tchaikovsky.
Yes, indeed it is. $2,000 level of Animal Verbs. To hum, buzz, or speak in a monotonous tone. That is a drone. How do we feel about that being an animal verb?
I mean,
because it's not like its own species. I guess you could say the same of ram.
Yeah. I think it was a stretch.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gotten there.
Yep.
If I'm trying to approach it from the animal side.
Yeah.
So I think it's borderline.
That was my sense also.
Did you get the $1,200 level of How's the King Taking It?
I did not.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. You would think at this point. You would think. Yeah. As quoted in Die Hard, when this ancient guy saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer. And Evan tried, who is Ozymandias? And It was Alexander the Great.
Yeah. Daily Double number 2, yes, is in How's the King Taking It? And it's at the $800 level. Pick number 10. Kendra finds that she's at 12,200. Evan is at 7,600. John's at 5,000. She wagers 5,000. Love it. Gets a clue. On March 7th, 1774, George III complained of outrageous proceedings at this city, especially in its harbor. And she gets it. That's, of course, Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Boston.
Yep. And Daily Double number 3 is at the $2,000 level of Merry Melodies. Pick number 23. John finds this one. He's at 9,000 with Evan at 5,200 and Kendra at 21,200. He goes big. He wagers 6,000 and he gets the clue. This 19th century composer's Mazurka number 9. And he figures it out. It is Chopin.
Yep. If it says Mazurka, it is Chopin, and that's all you ever need to know. So at the end of the Double Jeopardy round, Evan's at 6,000, Kendra's at 23,200, but it's not a lot because John is at 14,200. Final Jeopardy category is American immigrants, and the clue is his 1904 will stipulated that all the sums herein before specified for prizes shall be used for prizes only. Evan guessed who is Nobel, which has a prize, but I don't think he emigrated to America. That's incorrect. Wagered everything, drops to zero. John got it correct with who is Pulitzer. The Pulitzer Prize, and Pulitzer was from Hungary. Apparently he fought in the U.S. Civil War. I don't think I knew that. But John didn't wager anything.
Yeah.
Which I could see, I mean, hoping that Kendra bets too big, because if he wagers more than like 2,200, Evan could overtake him.
Mm-hmm.
But 2,200 wouldn't get him up to Kendra's cover bet incorrectness.
Right? Yeah.
So I think zero is a fine wager. Kendra also wrote who is Nobel, which is, we know, is incorrect, but she made a cover bet of 5,201, drops to 17,999, which is still good enough to be a semifinalist.
Mm-hmm. And on Thursday, the contestants are Joe Feldman, a technology professional from Bethesda, Maryland, Amanda Gansky, a product marketing manager from Austin, Texas, and Brendan Sargent, a small business owner originally from my hometown, Worcester, Massachusetts. And the Jeopardy round categories are Where the Wild Things Are, movies as TV news stories, I Have a Preposition for You, Frankly, Madeira, and I Don't Give a. All the responses will end with the letters AM.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that combination of things.
Yeah, that was fun.
The $800 is kind of a stretch. Wrestling throw that puts an opponent on the canvas back first. Brendan guessed what is a slam. And Ken asked him to be more specific. It got weird. They were looking for body slam. He said power slam, but also body slam. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a body slam. That feels, I don't know, that one doesn't fit quite as well as the others.
Yeah.
Although I guess, frankly, my dear, I don't give the Hoover Dam also doesn't really fit in the mouth. Doesn't fit the meter, but I don't know, it works.
Yeah. I like whenever this film at the $800 level comes up in game shows, the $800 level of movies as TV news stories. A young man from Mumbai won big on a game show tonight. The winning final answer, Aramis from The Three Musketeers. And Joe remembers that that's Slumdog Millionaire game show people. We like Slumdog Millionaire.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. It feels like it speaks to us.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I hear people talking about like Slumdog Millionaireing, like the stories of how they knew various things that they responded correctly on Jeopardy. We use it like a verb, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, to be honest, that's when people ask, like, how do you know so much stuff? It's like, oh, I just pay attention to stuff as it happens around me.
Yeah.
Like, that's really it. Like, I paid attention in school as I learned stuff, but also just like, I don't know, I just remember things.
Yeah. One time I was in Sunday school and the Sunday school teacher, I can't remember how this started, but she was like giving the other students a hard time for not having a like an outsized vocabulary. And she's like, I bet that Emily reads the dictionary every night. Don't you, Emily? Like, no, ma'am, I do not.
Absolutely not. Are you kidding me? I've
never sat down to read the dictionary. I've been accused of it. And also,
that's not how you... Right, but that's not how you learn.
Yeah, no.
You wouldn't learn those words anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's not like, ugh.
I bet Emily sits down to read the dictionary every night.
Wow. Wow, you really got to put me on blast there, Sunday school teacher. Thanks.
Felt for Amanda at the $1,000 level of I don't give a unit of weight. It's equal to 3.89 grams. And she rang in and she's like, oh, no, I thought it was going to be grams.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
That's the kind of thing where you're like, I'm going to buzz. Right. And like, mm-hmm. then you're like, oh, no, it's too late. I have buzzed.
Yeah, your brain I know that
1 gram is not equal to 3.89 grams. That's basic math.
I'm pretty sure about that much, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Daily Double number one is in Madeira at the $400 level. Pick number 22, Amanda finds it. She is at 400 at this point. Brendan is up to 6,200. Joe's at 1,800. She wagers the maximum of 1,000. Gets a clue. The Atlantic Ocean archipelago of Madeira is an autonomous region of this nation. And she guesses, what is Spain? No, it's Portugal. So at the end of the Jeopardy round, Brendan is at 7,000. Amanda is at zero. Joe is at 2,200. Get the Double Jeopardy categories ex-Soviet republics, alphabet pop, look in the cabinet, none but the brave, none spelled N-U-N, architecture terms, and numbers four letters. Each response here is a four-letter word based on a very simple code. Of course, the code being what number it is in the...
Right. A equals 1, B equals 2, etc.
Yeah. Very clear cipher. Very, very easy. I don't even think it is a cipher. It's just a... There was no transformation to it. It's just like translation, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And like, you could see them like struggle a little bit with some of them, but Jeopardy even threw us some additional help here by putting... either one of the first few letters, mm-hmm. or like 25, right? A Y.
Right.
Into all of the clues. Because like, what's the 17th letter? I don't know. I'm going to need to think about it for a second, you know? But mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 25, 26.
Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shade of blue. 3, 25, 1, 14. You can be like, okay, well, 3 is C, 25 is Y, right? Like, those are easy to get to. And then
you don't even... 1 is A, for yep. sure.
Yeah. And so you don't really need to figure out 14. If you're like, C, Y, A, blank, shade of blue, you should, I would think, be able to get to cyan.
Mm-hmm.
Which Amanda was. $1,600 level of ex-Soviet republics, the largest nation in Central Asia. This landlocked stan has abundant mineral and petroleum resources. Amanda got that one. That's Kazakhstan. And I...
You can't help but do Borat. I think our generation is cursed with Borat.
like Kazakhstan, at home on my couch, I was like, very nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
My wife.
You do a much better Borat than me. But like, just Kazakhstan cannot come up without me, without me trying to do Borat. It's Make so for embarrassing. The
nation of Kazakhstan, yes. I don't think we are stuck with Borat for the forever.
Yeah, it's going to be like our weird thing that people will be like, okay, grandma.
Mm-hmm. And it'll never be funny to younger generations. Uh-huh. And I hope we have the wherewithal to recognize that and not try to pretend that it is. But I know we're going to get to the point where we do that and like, oh, you kids don't know comedy. Anyway, I'm not going to go off on a Borat tangent. All right.
Daily Double number 2 is in Look in the Cabinet at the $2,000 level. It's pick number 10 and Joe finds it. He's at 4,200 with Brendan at 13,000 and Amanda at 2,000. He makes it a true Daily Double. Nice move. And he gets the clue. At the time of its establishment in 1849, this cabinet department was also known as the Home Department. And he figures it out. It is the Department of the Interior.
It is the Home Depot. Oh, no. You're right. And Daily Double number 3 is in None But the Brave. At the $1,200 level, pick number 25. Amanda finds this one. She's at 8,000. Brendan is up to 13,800. Joe is at 10,800. And she wagers 3,000. I think this would have been a time to try and take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bigger risk, but there are only five clues left on the board after this. She wagers 3,000. Gets a clue. Three-word title of Sister Helen Prejean's powerful account of being a death row counselor. And she knows it. That's Dead Man Walking.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of the Double Jeopardy round, Brendan's at 15,800. Amanda's at 11,000. Joe's at 12,800. The final Jeopardy category is global geology. And the clue is, in this nation of 360,000 people, you can walk along the boundaries of the Eurasian and North American tectonic plates. Amanda tried, what is Norway? That's not correct. She's wagered everything, so she drops to zero. Joe figured it out, though. It is Iceland, and he's wagered 10,000, which brings him up to 22,800. And Brendan went to the wrong region. He tried, what is Mongolia? I don't really know whether Mongolia is especially geologically significant. But
I think you'd have to go a little bit farther, like, to get to the Ring of Fire. I think you'd want to think of geologically active, like volcanically active.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
So, but yeah, it makes sense. Iceland makes a ton of sense there.
Yeah, Iceland. Yeah, so Mongolia is incorrect. Brendan's wagered 9801, a cover bet. So he drops way down to 5999, and Joe gets the semifinalist spot.
So that brings us to Friday, when we have the contestants Jamie Logan, a freelancer from Augusta, Maine, Matt Glassman, a bar owner from Los Angeles, California, and Daniel Wynn, a high school math teacher and doctoral student from San Jose, California. The Jeopardy round categories are Canadian cities, the Gene Pool, but about people named Gene, Dead Scientists Society, pick a number between 5 and 477. The virtues, and two words in one. You can figure it out pretty easy, I think, but the $200 level of two words in one was a little bit tricky. Mm-hmm. Cleopatra's cobra plus a command to stop gives us this road surface. If you're able to get to the two components quickly, you can get to asphalt. But if you're just trying to sound it out, you wouldn't put asp with halt and...
Right. Yeah, and because the P and the H make a... digraph? Is that a digraph?
I will take your word for it.
Yes. Yes, that is a digraph. That's one of those words that comes up a lot when you have children in, like, early grades.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not there yet, you will be soon.
Yeah, working on speech patterns and such.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of course, I say that really the only one that actually fit the, like, put these two things together and it'll sound right. It's a $400 clue. To ask for spare change plus 1/9 of a baseball game gives us a starting place that's beginning. And that's even not even, you know, entirely.
Yeah.
But
it would be weird if somebody said, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
The others are Patriot from Pat and Riot, which is different. Massacre from Mass and Acre, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then Finale from Finn and Ale.
So yeah.
I guess that's going to happen.
I always think it's funny when Pavlov comes up in Jeopardy because we use the term Pavlov to refer to any phrase that might appear in a clue where you should automatically go to a specific response. When I saw Amy Schneider speaking, she alluded to the idea of Pavlov's without actually using the term. She said, whenever Jeopardy says Jewish painter, it's going to be Chagall. And people laughed like that was really funny, which is...
but it is.
It is. Like, anyway, in Dead Scientist Society, the $200 level, this Russian famously conditioned dogs to salivate every time a bell rang. That's Pavlov.
Did the Red River of the North come up in something else recently?
Not that I recall.
I don't know why it's like pinging my brain as something we just had, the Red River of the North. Maybe I'm thinking of something entirely different. No, it did.
Did it?
On September 14th in Alliterative Geography.
Oh.
This waterway forms about 400 miles of the border between Minnesota and North Dakota.
That's less the than Red a River month. Of the
North. Yeah, because I didn't get it then. And I was like, oh, I've never heard of that river. And then it showed up here and I'm looking at this and think like it hit me in the head. I was like, have I watched this episode before? Why is the Red River North a thing? Yeah, less than a month ago.
Yeah.
This is what you get.
Yes, indeed.
You recycle material.
Mm-hmm. Well spotted, though. It sailed right past me. Daily Double, number one, is in Dead Scientist Society at the $600 level. Pick number 13. Daniel finds it. He is at 1,000 with Matt at 1,800 and Jamie at zero. He makes it a true daily double and he gets the clue. This 19th century Italian physicist lends his name to a law and a number relating equal volumes of gases and molecules. And Daniel gets it correct. It is Avogadro.
Yes.
And at the end of the Jeopardy round, Daniel is at 4,600, Matt's at 5,600, Jamie's at 1,600. And the Double Jeopardy categories are the Crimean War, Literary Pop, This or That, Swords, or S-words, as the case may be, If at First You Don't Secede, and Try, Try Again with TRI in quotation marks.
I mean, that S-words joke, hilarious.
That's great. That's great.
From Celebrity Jeopardy, SNL Celebrity Jeopardy.
Yes, that was good. I appreciated Daniel and Ken kind of playing around with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2000 level of If at First You Don't Secede, the answer wasn't Ethiopia. Or I guess the answer had Ethiopia in it, I should say. This nation has fought several battles over territory with Ethiopia since seceding from it in 1993. That's Eritrea. And Jamie got it. But it is, you know, dealing with Ethiopia. So once again, just spend some time with Ethiopia. Is this? No, it couldn't be. The last time this category came up, the Try Try Again, was this one I talked about the triumvirate? For it was at the $2,000 level.
Yeah.
Hard to know. Hard to know.
Hard to know, indeed.
Does not appear to be.
We have Try Try Again in 2005.
So probably not then. Probably not then.
They really just recycled the category just word for word. Exact same.
But it was a different time. Daily Double number two is in the Crimean War at the $1,200 level. Pick number five. Daniel uncovers it. He is at 5,400. Matt is at 6,000. Jamie's at 2,400. And he bets it all. Gets the clue. Stark, quote, sketches that this Russian wrote from his experience in the war helped advance his literary career. And Daniel got it correct with Who is Tolstoy?
And Daily Double number three is pick number eight. So we're getting them all out of the way early. Matt finds this one at the $1,200 level of If at First You Don't Secede. He's at 9,200 with Daniel at 10,800 and Jamie at 2,400. He wagers 4,000 looking to take that lead back. And he gets the clue. In 1965, this island city-state peacefully seceded from Malaysia. And he got it correct. It is Singapore.
Yep. So going into Final Jeopardy, Daniel is at 20,800, Matt is at 19,200, and Jamie's at 9,200. Final Jeopardy category is composers, and the clue is he was given piano lessons by Madame Motet de Fleurville, the mother-in-law of Paul Verlaine, whose poetry he would later set to music. Jamie got it correct with Who is Debussy? Ken informed us that Clair de Lune was based on a Verlaine poem. I didn't know that. Jamie bet it all, went up to 18,400. Matt wrote Who Beethoven? That was incorrect. He wagered 1601, so he drops down to 17,599. And Daniel wrote Who is Radutoma? That's also incorrect, as we know. And he bet nothing.
Yeah, what? He
bet nothing. I mean, their scores are so close that a cover bet is basically an all-in, so I could see the resistance to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not going to do that, then you might as well just bet nothing. It was a risky choice, but it ended up paying off. If he had bet, you know, really hardly anything at all, then Jamie would have ended up winning. But Daniel allows himself to advance. And so that's the end of the week. The end of this first week of spades. We have more spades weeks coming up.
In spades.
We have them in spades. Ugh. But this is the point in the show where we take a break and remind you that we have a Patreon. It is patreon.com/potentpotables. That's where you can go if you are so just moved by our deep and thoughtful analysis that you feel like you just have to provide us with money as the only way that you can show your thanks, you can do it there. And we really, really, really appreciate everyone who is already doing that, allowing us to operate at, you know, parity without without losing money on this here venture that we do enjoy, but we appreciate it a lot.
It does feel good to like not lose money on it. Yeah,
it does. So we, once again, that's patreon.com/potentpotables. And when we ask for money, we also want to acknowledge that there are more important things. So you can find a number of causes that we believe in the show notes, and we encourage you to check them out and contribute if you feel so inclined. Emily.
Yes, Kyle.
What are we talking about this day?
That is a great question. I don't think we're talking about Andrew Johnson and Harry Truman.
We are not talking about Andrew Johnson and Harry Truman.
That is okay. But yeah, that kind of had to be my first guess.
Right, because it was a final Jeopardy.
Because it was a final Jeopardy. Are we talking about The Art of Pete Mondrian?
We are not talking about Pete Mondrian. I thought about it.
Okay. What about Heliopolis?
We are also not talking about Heliopolis. There were some good, tempting triple stumpers this week. We're going to talk about this from the Monday game, the missed daily double in the South Africa category.
Oh.
That Bert missed. The majestic Victorian City Hall in East London, South Africa, held the first hearing of this post-apartheid TRC, this commission. That's the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Looking into it, I had to do some decision making. There could be a lot to talk about here, and of course, if you want to like learn more about it, you can dive in basically as deep as you want. It's a big thing, and I don't want to like undersell the importance of it, but I don't want to call it a deep dive really, because it's, I'm not going to get that super deep. I'm going to put it into some
more a little bit snorkel.
Exactly. Like we're going to be at the surface level, and we're going to look down into it a little bit. Just get some context around it and talk a little bit about Truth and Reconciliation Commissions in general.
Ooh, very nice.
And the quiz will continue that trend. So, there have been a lot of Truth and Reconciliation Commissions, or truth commissions, because surprising no one, humans have been pretty terrible to each other for a long time, and in a lot of different places. So, I mean, if you just go to Wikipedia and look up the list of Truth and Reconciliation Commissions, it gives you a good list from a variety of different countries dealing with a variety of different human rights issues. But the one we're going to talk about is the one in South Africa. I think that's the first one, and the one that I usually hear of when I hear Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But obviously, wherever you like, people living in different parts of the world would, I think, associate it with different things depending on what they've dealt with. And even like more recently, I feel like it was like kind of pinging something in my memory that Canada has a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, or had, running from June 2008 to 2015. The fallout of that commission is still being dealt with if you get into the issues with Canadian Indian residential schools. In the news in the last couple of years, with like more things coming out, that's mostly what that Truth and Reconciliation Commission dealt with. But like I said, plenty of other countries and places have dealt with atrocities with these reconciliation commissions to varying degrees of effectiveness, right? Like something that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa particularly, and most of them at least say that they want to avoid, is victor's justice, which is the term. You could probably figure out what the term means if you've never heard it before, but it's like when a group is successful after an armed conflict, you know, like exacting excessive or unjustified punishment on the defeated parties. And so these commissions, at least on the surface, seek to avoid that while still acknowledging and working toward healing for wrongs that have been committed. So the one for South Africa was a post-apartheid Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It was authorized by Nelson Mandela, and it was chaired by Desmond Tutu, who I don't need to talk about because you already did. It was assembled in 1996. So apartheid as an actual, like, established government policy technically ended, I believe, in 1994. I believe that was when the election...
I think that's correct, yeah.
The elections in 1994 were the first multiracial elections allowed, which is when Nelson Mandela was elected. So in 1996, this Truth and Reconciliation Commission was authorized. Later, in the year 2000, the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation was established. It's the successor organization to the TRC. So it was based in Cape Town. Remember, South Africa has three capital cities, Cape Town being the legislative, I believe. Yeah, it is the seat of parliament in South Africa. Hearings started in 1996, and the mandate of the commission was to bear witness, to record, and in some cases grant amnesty to the perpetrators of crimes relating to human rights violations, as well as offer reparation and rehabilitation to victims. A register of reconciliation was also established so that ordinary South Africans who wished to express regret for past failures could also express their remorse. The TRC had a number of well-known figures, obviously Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The deputy chairman was Alexander Borain, who was a South African politician, minister, and anti-apartheid activist. I believe Borain was white. He grew up in a poor white housing estate. And he was a lay preacher, studied at Rhodes University. There was also Sisi Kompepe, who was a judge born in Soweto and worked her way up through the law system, and was a well-known figure. Also, Wenand Malan, I don't know if I pronounced that name, but he was an Afrikaner. And then there was also Klaas de Jonge, which I love these names. He was a Dutch and Afrikaner. So yeah, I'm not going to list everybody, but there were some like well-known figures on the commission in South Africa, and some of them internationally recognized. The work of the TRC was accomplished through three committees. The Human Rights Violation Committee investigated human rights abuses that occurred between 1960 and 1994. The Reparation and Rehabilitation Committee was charged with restoring victims' dignity and formulating proposals to assist with rehabilitation. And the Amnesty Committee considered applications from individuals who applied for amnesty in accordance with the provisions of the Promotion of National Unity and Reconciliation Act, which was the official act that, like, got all this moving. Public hearings of the Human Rights Violation Committee and the Amnesty Committee were held all across South Africa, including Cape Town, Johannesburg, Randburg. The commission was empowered to grant amnesty to those who committed abuses during the apartheid era, as long as the crimes were politically motivated, proportionate, and there was a full disclosure by the person seeking amnesty. I did a little bit of digging, and I don't know what proportionate means. I don't know how you determine that. And I think part of the issue with this committee and any other, you know, commission like it is there are these things that have to kind of be gray areas and open to interpretation.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with this kind of thing. The commission heard reports of human rights violations and considered amnesty applications from all sides, from the apartheid state to the liberation forces, including the African National Congress, which has been the ruling party of South Africa since 1994. Nelson Mandela was part of the ANC. But during the apartheid era, the ANC was a militant group. At least some members were militant. I don't know that I would necessarily describe the whole thing as a militant organization, but they did some bad things too. Like, they were put in a tough situation. And, you know, I don't know what I would do in that situation myself, but the fact remains that they, you know, killed people and did things like that too. So they also approached the commission. The commission found that more than 19,000 people had been victims of gross human rights violations, and an additional 3,000 victims were identified through the applications for amnesty. The commission voiced its regret that there was very little overlap of victims between those seeking restitution and those seeking amnesty, which is unfortunate. 5,392 amnesty applications were refused. Only 849 were granted. So amnesty was not guaranteed if you applied for it, obviously, but some people did receive amnesty. This Truth and Reconciliation Commission was one of the earliest ones. It wasn't the first like truth commission, but the 90s was kind of when these things started. There weren't a lot before that. And so this was a, you know, a departure from things like the Nuremberg trials, which were very punitive, right? Those were meant to, you know, exact retributive justice, mm-hmm. whereas these were really supposed to pursue restorative justice. The effectiveness of the commission was measured in a variety of ways, one being its usefulness in terms of confirming what had happened during the apartheid regime, the feelings of reconciliation that could be linked to the commission, and the positive effects both domestically and internationally that the commission brought about, whether it's political, economic, whatever, in South Africa. One study by Orlando Lentini measured the opinions of three ethnic groups, the British Africans, the Afrikaners, and the Xhosa, or Xhosa. I can't really do the click. According to the researchers, the participants, all of them perceived the TRC to be effective in bringing out the truth, but to varying degrees depending on the group in question. Some viewed the findings as being not entirely accurate, as many people would lie in order to keep themselves out of trouble while receiving amnesty for their crimes. Some said that the proceedings only helped to remind them of the horrors that had taken place when they had been working to forget such things. So it, depending on who you were and, you know, had a different view on the effectiveness of the TRC. The hearings were initially set to be heard in, like, in camera, which is weird to me that it's a, in camera is a legal term that means in private.
Mm-hmm.
It means in chambers, or in English, we would say in chambers, which now that we have things called cameras, my mind is like, oh, they were going to broadcast it. But that's like the complete opposite. But the intervention of 23 non-governmental organizations succeeded in gaining media access to the hearings. The South African National Broadcaster televised the first 2 hours of the first Human Rights Violation Committee hearing live on April 15th, 1996. With funding from the Norwegian government, radio continued to broadcast live throughout. Why in the Norwegian government? Not sure. High-profile hearings such as Winnie Mandela's testimony was also televised live. The rest of the hearings were presented on television each Sunday from April 1996 to June 1998 in hour-long episodes of the Truth Commission special report. Yeah, it's been portrayed in a variety of different ways. There are documentaries like Confronting the Truth from 2006, Facing the Truth in 1999, which was a PBS series, Long Night's Journey into Day from 2000. It won the Grand Jury Prize for Best Documentary at the Sundance Film Festival. It has also appeared in feature films like Forgiveness, In My Country, which starred Samuel L. Jackson, I believe, Red Dust, Zulu Love Letter, The Forgiven, which starred Forrest Whitaker as Desmond Tutu. There have been stage adaptations such as Truth in Translation, Ubu and the Truth Commission, The Story I'm About to Tell, which was created in collaboration with the Kulumani Support Group, and others, showed up in, like, you know, books and stuff, poetry, such as Ingrid de Kock's poetry in Terrestrial Things, which was a collection from 2002. Ingrid de Kock is a South African poet. A 1998 study by South Africa's Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation and the Kulumani Support Group surveyed several hundred victims of human rights abuse during the apartheid era and found that most of them felt the TRC had really failed to achieve reconciliation between the black and white communities. Which, I mean, you know, we're 25 years out from that, which is weird to say. And yeah, I mean, that's, Americans don't really deal with South Africa a lot unless you have a specific reason to. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've mentioned my somewhat small but still like present connection to South Africa. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit more like, I pay attention a little bit more, and like, yeah, reconciliation has not super happened.
Yep.
Most believe that justice was a prerequisite for reconciliation rather than an alternative to it, presumably a like retributive justice, and that the TRC had been weighted in favor of the perpetrators of the abuse. As a result of those shortcomings, many victims groups, together with NGOs and lawyers, took various matters that were related to the commission to South African and U.S. courts in the early 2000s. There was also issues with translation of language for testimonies. It was believed that there was a big discrepancy between the emotions of the witnesses and those translating for them, which makes sense because the translator is just going to give you the words, whereas mm-hmm. the person actually telling the story is going to be a lot more invested.
Yeah.
F.W. de Klerk was one of the people who appeared before the commission. It reiterated his apology for the suffering caused by apartheid, and many Black South Africans were angered that amnesty was being granted to him and other members of the apartheid government, which I can kind of understand.
Yeah.
But I mentioned the play Ubu and the Truth Commission that was written by playwright Jane Taylor, who kind of summarized the TRC's lopsided influence like this. The TRC is unquestionably a monumental process, the consequences of which will take years to unravel. For all its pervasive weight, however, it infiltrates our culture asymmetrically, unevenly across multiple sectors. Its place in small rural communities, for example, when it establishes itself in a local church hall and absorbs substantial numbers of the population, is very different from its situation in large urban centers, where its presence is marginalized by other social and economic activities. So, I mean, you can have different opinions on it. On the outside looking in, you know, toward the past, I think it was ultimately probably a good thing, at least to try.
Yeah.
You know, like, we can have arguments about reconciliation versus retribution all day, but it seemed to at least go in line with what, you know, Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu and the leaders post-apartheid were trying to create.
Yeah.
So that's the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I mentioned others. There's one in Algeria, formed in 2003 to look into human rights violations that occurred in the 1990s, dealing with questions of disappearances. There's one in Argentina, actually started in 1983, also looking into forced disappearances under a previous junta. I mentioned the one in Canada. There's one in Colombia in 2007. And then another one in 2016. There was one in Chile, created in April 1990, investigating deaths and disappearances under Pinochet. Usually these things come along after something bad.
Right.
And if there was a bad time and bad things happen, you're gonna get one of these. There's one in Haiti. There was one in Germany after unification in 1992, inquiry into crimes of the SED in East Germany. Makes sense. I'm not going to list them all. There's one in Ireland, though, launched in 1994 to reconcile communities in Northern Ireland. There was one in Norway, as well as Finland, to deal with previous governments' treatment of ethnic populations like the Sami and the Kvenn.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a number of them in Africa, you know, after various revolutions or ethnic cleansing occurrences, Rwanda, Sierra Leone, that kind of thing. There are a number of them. Like, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission is not just South Africa. They're occurring all over the world. Ideally, they actually lead to truth and reconciliation. Obviously, they have to be implemented with clear and truly good intent, and they have to be followed through and embraced by the population.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, what's it really going to do, you know? So, yeah, that's all I think I'm going to say about Truth and Reconciliation Commissions. But hopefully, I don't know, at least with the South Africa one, we got a little bit more clarity on it.
Yeah. Yeah, this was great. I appreciate it.
All right. You ready for a quiz?
Absolutely, I am.
Okay. These are all taken from other Truth and Reconciliation Commissions that I either mentioned or didn't mention. And really, it's just the location that I took. Some of them actually deal with the information. Some of them have almost nothing to do with the commission for that place. The first one, question one, is dealing with Democratic Republic of Congo. As we talked about this week, it used to be called Zaire. And we are reminded that the capital is Kinshasa. On October 30th, 1974, Kinshasa was the location of the Rumble in the Jungle, which was between which two boxing legends? The fight was decided in the eighth round when the greatest knocked out Big George. I'll give you 5 points each.
I did that whole boxing deep dive way back. And I'm pretty sure, like, surely the greatest is Muhammad Ali. And
yes, it is.
There's part of me that's like, no, Emily, you need to think of somebody else, not the grill guy. But Big George, you said, is the other one, right? I think I'm going to go George Foreman. If there's a different George I'm supposed to be remembering, I'm not remembering.
It is George Foreman, the grill guy. Yes.
Those George Foreman grills, man.
They're what he's known for now. Mm-hmm. At the time, his record as heavyweight like champion was 40-0 with 37 knockouts. He was undefeated before the Rumble in the Jungle. However, Muhammad Ali did overcome him, knocking him out in the 8th round for the World Heavyweight Championship. That is the Rumble in the Jungle, and it was, in fact, in Kinshasa. Nice. All right, you got 10 points. Question 2. Yugoslavia. There was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission for former Yugoslavia, which I don't, if anybody knows anything about it, shouldn't be a surprise.
Yep.
However, this Commission of Truth and Reconciliation was created by the president in 1999, didn't finish its report. So that's cool. Anyway, speaking of Yugoslavia, for 1 point each and a bonus 3 if you get all 7, which current countries comprise the former Yugoslavia?
Oh, no. It's like my mind has gone completely blank.
It's like when you're just getting to know somebody and they're like, so what kind of food do you like? And you're like, oh, I don't eat anything. Nothing? I don't know.
I think Croatia is one.
Yes. I'll give you up to 10 guesses.
Okay.
For 7 countries. So that's 1, and that is correct.
All right. I'm going to say not Slovakia, but Slovenia.
Slovenia is correct.
There we go. Somehow that is triggering a, like, and then this one, and then that one. Serbia, Montenegro.
Serbia is correct. Montenegro is correct.
I think what I'm realizing is that I'm not entirely sure where Yugoslavia was.
Well, you got the, you have the general area there with those countries.
Yeah. My ideas now are getting increasingly far-fetched. I don't think it's Belarus, but I'm going to say Belarus.
Belarus is not one.
All right. Keep thinking of things that I know for a fact were their own countries long before any of this. Oh, Bosnia. It's Bosnia and Herzegovina, is that right?
Yes, that is right.
Yeah, there we go. I don't think I'm going to think of another, so I'm gonna call it, like, because now my brain is like Armenia, Poland.
You're gonna tap at 5.
Yeah, those are the guesses that I think I'm gonna be able to generate.
All right, the other two that you did not get are Kosovo and North Macedonia.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, those are the countries that make up Yugoslavia. Basically, all those smaller countries between like Greece and Bulgaria,
mm-hmm.
and Romania, up to like Hungary, you know, Czechoslovakia. Anyway,
yeah,
those are the countries that make up Yugoslavia. If you don't know Yugoslavian history, check it out. Not super happy, but important to know.
Yeah.
All right, you are at 15 points. Moving on to question 3. This is also a geography one, but it's world capitals. Dealing with Sri Lanka. Of course, there actually been a couple in Sri Lanka. There was particularly the Lessons Learnt and Reconciliation Commission, which was an 18-month inquiry submitted in November of 2011 to look into the 26-year-long Sri Lankan Civil War, which that is also, obviously we're dealing with terrible things. So when I say it was a tragic and terrible thing, like, yeah, of course it was. So Sri Lanka has kind of a split capital. The parliament is based in Sri Jayawardenepura, Kota, but the de facto economic and executive capital is the larger urban center that borders it. What is the shorter name of that city? The name of the city is a homophone of a Peter Falk TV character who appeared in the role from 1968 through 2003.
Okay, is it Columbo?
It is Columbo, yes, but spelled with just O's.
Mm-hmm.
No U in there. But yes, Columbo. I just always remember learning that Columbo was the capital. And so, like, when I have more recently seen Sri Jayawardenepura Kota, I was like, well, that must be new. But it's not really new. Like, Parliament's been there since, like, the 70s. It's just Colombo is like the big city next to it, and that's kind of where most of stuff happens. So apparently that's why Columbo is kind of like shared with the capital responsibilities. All right, you're at 25 points. Question four. This one is bringing it back to the United States, where we got the Greensboro Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was a non-governmental body that ran from 2004 to 2006, investigating the deadly events that took place on November 3rd, 1979, in Greensboro, North Carolina. That was known as the Greensboro Massacre. On that date, a protest by the CWP was met by members of the KKK and the American Nazi Party. A confrontation ensued in which the Klan and Nazis murdered five protesters and injured 10 others. All of that is to simply provide background about the event. The question I'm asking is, what does CWP stand for? Its affiliation is historically opposed to Nazism.
I don't think I know.
I will also say that while they have been opposed to Nazism, historically, the CWP has not been embraced as a like pro-American group.
That makes me think maybe the C is for communist. There was part of me that, like, because the KKK came up, I was like, is the C colored like NAACP? But I think I'm going to go with communist. So the W, it's probably either women or workers. And I'm going to go with Communist Workers' Party.
Very well reasoned. It is the Communist Workers' Party. Well done.
Just felt like if there was a 1979 event where like the KKK killed like a women's gathering, I feel like I would know, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, the CWP march was going to, you know, be for, you know, justice and equity for workers, a labor movement kind of thing. And the KKK and Nazis decided that they wanted to get involved. So naturally people died because that's what happens when fascists get involved. All right, you are at 35 points. Going into question five. This is a video game question, so I know you've been working on your video game, although it's more in my arena, I think, than yours. Dealing with South Korea. South Korea had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It reported in 2004 it was a presidential commission, and then another Truth and Reconciliation Commission opened in 2005. And there's also been a local commission for Jeju Island, which apparently had a series of armed uprisings and counterinsurgencies in the past. So South Korea had, you wouldn't know it from the image that it has right now internationally. There was a dictatorship, really repressive regime in the mid 20th century, like lots of stuff to look into in South Korea as well. Anyway, this has nothing to do with that. It's difficult to quantify popularity, but arguably the most popular esport in South Korea since the release of its first title in 1998 has been what real-time strategy franchise? Produced by Blizzard Entertainment, the initial game was followed in the same year by the expansion Brood War, then three installments of its sequel, Wings of Liberty in 2010, Heart of the Swarm in 2013, and Legacy of the Void in 2015. Its popularity has waned since Activision Blizzard has focused on other IPs since then.
Okay. This is not something I play.
I am aware of that. We would have talked about that.
Yeah. Okay. My first thought was World of Warcraft, but I think this is a little bit early for that. I'm remembering a game that I knew people who were like obsessed with it in college, and the game they were talking about sounds like the right thing. This is very Slumdog Millionaire. Only if I get it right, though.
That's a good point.
Okay, so the name that's coming back to me, I think, is StarCraft, but I'm worried that maybe that is like a television show that I'm mixing up with whatever I'm trying to think of, but I'm going to say StarCraft.
It is StarCraft. Woo! Well done, yes. Yeah, very, very nice. Yes, I'm sure people in college were obsessed with it. Speaking of Pavlov's earlier, honestly, South Korea esports, StarCraft should be one of the games that comes up in that.
Okay.
Immediately to your mind.
Okay.
Brood War was insanely popular in the competitive scene in South Korea for, I mean, since 1998, basically, until 2010. So for a good long time. Like, and there are, of course, other games that are played in the esports realm. Like I said, its popularity has waned in the last 8 years, or really in the last, like, 5 years, since Blizzard stopped doing anything with StarCraft. But yeah, it over time, if you look at it, it's probably still in the last 20 years the most popular one.
Yeah.
All right. Nice. You are at, what, 45 points?
Yeah.
Yeah, 45 points. That's nice. Woo. And the last one, the final category is, I'm going to say, how do I word this? Upcoming holidays. I'll just say, like, upcoming holidays.
Let's wager 40 of it.
Okay. This one is taken from the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions from Australia and Canada and New Zealand. So all these parts of the former Commonwealth, not surprisingly, their commissions dealt with mistreatment and human rights violations concerning what general classification of groups, which is timely for our U.S. calendar. Really, this question is timely for our U.S. calendar.
Seems like we must be talking about, like, indigenous people.
We are talking about indigenous peoples, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, many of these commissions are dealing with that in some way, but particularly, you know, the Australian dealing with the mistreatment of Aborigines and Canadian dealing with the mistreatment of Canadian Indians, especially in their residential schools, New Zealand dealing with the Maori and all that. So, yes. And of course, Indigenous Peoples Day is Monday.
Yes.
Whenever this comes out, it might be that day or just past. So very nice.
It's about to be Canadian Thanksgiving. And I was like, is Canadian Thanksgiving also problematic around, like, kind of the narrative around Indigenous people? I don't know.
I also don't know. But you know what? Here we are with 85 points.
Yay. Well done. Thank you. This was fun. And by it was fun, I mean, I did a good job on the quiz. Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for spending your time with us. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a rating or review if you have a minute to do that. If you want to check out our Patreon, it's patreon.com/potentpotables. And if you have friends who are fans of Jeopardy, let them know about us.
Yeah, you can all find us on Facebook at Potent Potables, on Twitter at PotentPotables1. Our email address is potentpotablescast@gmail.com, and our website is potentpod.com.
And we'll be back next week with another week of Jeopardy Wildcard. And until then, may your minds be quick and your buzzers be quicker.